Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Hello and thanks for downloading Swiss Info's podcast for October the 3rd. I'm Thomas Stevens. Banking fat cats, Nazis and barefooted fugitives all squeeze into this week's podcast. But first, this.
E allora, signore e signori, Miss Svizzera 2008 è
Whitney Tailani!
Seconda recca data!
Yes, tension, tiaras and tears can mean only one thing. It's that time of the year again when the Swiss kick feminism back 30 years and choose Miss Switzerland. On September the 27th, it was the turn of Whitney Tailani, vital statistics 82, 60, 90, from Yverdon in western Switzerland. You know you're getting old when beauty queens are born in the 1990s, and Tailani, who is of Chinese and Panamanian descent and based her election campaign on a multicultural ticket, is the youngest ever winner. The 18-year-old, who, we learnt, has a weakness for handbags, started sobbing like a UBS shareholder when she received the crown from last year's winner, Amanda Aman, 84, 65, 95. More entertainingly, however, were the handbags at dawn in the run-up to the final, when one contestant had a go at her rivals for being thick and unable to name all seven Swiss cabinet ministers. How many can you get? Miss, and indeed Mr. Switzerland, have a near-mythical status in a country with almost no internationally known figures from pop culture. Roger Federer is probably the only living Swiss that most foreigners can name. As a result, the Swiss media desperately try to manufacture celebrities from television presenters, folk musicians and beauty competitions. Combining this with Switzerland's conservative attitude towards women, who only got the vote in 1971, Miss Switzerland's face is rarely absent from newspapers or billboards. Amanda Mann, for example, who said she didn't like men seeing her as a sex object as she posed in a delightful white bikini, is said to have earned $500,000 last year. And now to our main story. Their shares might have lost two-thirds of their value in the past 12 months, but UBS shareholders left an extraordinary general meeting in Basel on October the 2nd with a spring in their step.
I'm optimistic. We've gone through a bad time in the last 12, 15 months now, and that things will improve, especially with the new board that seems a lot more reasonable than the old one, you know, the new chairman of the board. I don't think they're going to take as much money from the company as the old chairman did and the old board did. So I'm optimistic. They've cut the risk exposure to a large extent now, especially in the USA. So I'm hoping for the best.
Shareholder Barry McGarty speaking to Matthew Allen. The third shareholders' meeting of 2008 was called to announce details of a new strategic approach and to vote on new board members. UBS chairman Peter Kurer assured those present that Switzerland's largest bank, which has lost some $43 billion in the subprime mortgage crisis, was well on course to turning around its battered fortunes. UBS was poised, he said, to post a small profit in the third quarter, figures for which will be announced on November the 4th, and he repeated expectations that 2009 would be profitable overall. For his part, McGarty didn't think UBS was likely to follow US banks Bear Stearns, Merrill Lynch and Lehman Brothers into financial oblivion.
No, I don't think so. First of all, I think the UBS recapitalised at a good time, which a lot of the US banks didn't do. That was in spring of this year, or the end of last year as well. Secondly, I don't think the Swiss government could allow the UBS to go down. I think the Swiss government would have to bail it out in the worst case.
The EGM was noticeably less hostile than the two previous meetings this year, but some shareholders still criticised the high level of pay and bonuses at the bank. Kurer said bonuses would in future be pegged to the financial results of its divisions, creating a more transparent system that rewards management for sustainable value creation. McGarty criticised previous strategies, but repeated his confidence for the future.
Of course, one isn't satisfied when a company or a bank loses money. You know, you're not satisfied with the board, you're not satisfied with the management, and that the UBS apparently the right hand didn't know what the left hand was doing for a time. With these subprime loans, they formed a hedge fund at one stage and invested in the hedge fund in subprime loans, whereas the UBS Investment Bank was doing exactly the same thing. So there was a massive overinvestment in subprime loans. And I'm not satisfied with how things went on then, but I think in the future things will improve. I'm optimistic.
UBS shareholder Barry McGarty speaking to Matthew Allen at UBS's extraordinary general meeting in Basel. On October the 3rd, the day after the EGM, UBS announced it was going to cut 2,000 investment banking jobs and close its commodities business. And now a lighter look at this week's news. Have you recently seen a man running around in socks and handcuffs? If so, police in Canton Aargau would love to hear from you. On September the 29th, a 20-year-old burglar was transferred by a security firm from a train to a waiting police car. However, locking the car doors was obviously considered too draconian, and when the policeman's eyes were turned, the prisoner, who was for some reason shoeless, nipped out and sprinted into the woods. "We're still trying to work out exactly what happened," said a police spokesman, adding that a search using a helicopter and dogs had proved fruitless. "But at least the fugitive isn't considered dangerous," he said. In a separate incident, on September 30th, a woman fainted at Zurich Main Station. Her boyfriend got caught up in a fight, and she ended up dying from tuberculosis. Yes, La Traviata, Giuseppe Verdi's opera, where instead of bleeding, people sing, was staged among the cafes, kiosks, and platforms, not to mention hundreds of thousands of travellers of Switzerland's busiest station. The performance was broadcast live on German-language television, and Swissinfo took part by streaming the opera online. Reactions, however, were mixed. "A top idea," one young commuter told Swissinfo. "Although I'm not an opera fan, I still find it great." "A stupid idea," said an old man on the other hand. "The hellish number of people in the station already makes it hectic enough, and now an opera performance." All three Swiss football teams playing in the UEFA Cup might have crashed out on October the 2nd, but on October the 3rd, Switzerland proudly received an Ig Nobel Prize, the annual awards given for weird but often surprisingly practical scientific achievements. This year's Ig Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to the Swiss Federal Ethics Committee on Non-Human Biotechnology and the citizens of Switzerland for adopting the legal principle that plants have dignity. Back in April, a report by the government-appointed committee said interfering with plants without a valid reason was morally inadmissible. Committee member Urs Thurnherr was present at the awards held at Harvard. Now it's time for our feature article. In 1 month, Americans go to the polls amid an economic crisis to democratically elect their next leader. 75 years ago, Germans did exactly the same thing and handed control of the Weimar Republic to Adolf Hitler. This week, Claire O'Dea spoke to Alexander Wagner, one of the authors of a study at Zurich University, who explained why the consequences of Hitler's election were extraordinary, but the voting behaviour that led to it was not.
Analysing the growing share of the German electorate who voted for Hitler is the most studied issue in the history of voting behaviour research. The economic depression in Germany, which followed the Wall Street crash in 1929, resulted in unemployment and increasingly hungry and angry voters. But Swiss researchers have shown that those most hurt by the depression and most likely to oppose the government were a disparate group who didn't uniformly turn to the Nazis. Alexander Wagner from Zurich University's Swiss Banking Institute explains why he and the other authors of the study set out to discover who had an interest, specifically an economic interest, in voting for Hitler.
"We did not consider these elections as being unique. We said, look, these are maybe elections as any other, so we started with an economic explanation."
In more than 70 years of research, almost every social group has been blamed for backing Hitler at the ballot box. However, this study, published in the Journal of Economic History, has identified a particular group of people who stood to benefit most from Nazi policies.
"We identify a set of people whom we summarise under the term the working poor as being those who benefited the most from the Nazi policies and the promised Nazi policies. It was small shopkeepers, small businessmen and women who had no interest in the government's programs. They had an interest in the sort of supporting ideas of the Nazis that were for free enterprise, sort of against big business, protecting the small farmers and so on. That was in their immediate interest.
Wagner says this contrasts with earlier thinking that pointed the finger at the unemployed.
This is another difference to the previous literature, where people had said, look, the unemployed helped the Nazis in their rise. We find to the contrary, no. The unemployed voted less than proportionately for Nazis. They did vote more than proportionately for the communists.
Wagner believes there are lessons in these findings for contemporary European politics.
What's so interesting is how a fairly small party became so big, first of all, and then how that big party was able to use what relatively little power it had gotten to essentially ruin the whole system. And that's a little bit a warning sign, I would say, also for current developments. If we look around Europe, there are quite a few countries where right-wing extremist parties are getting in the 10% plus range, and I don't think this is something to be neglected.
That was Alexander Wagner talking to Claire O'Dea. Thanks for listening. Learn more about these stories at swissinfo.ch. Turn on, tune in, and download again next week for more Swiss news and views. I'm Thomas Stevens.